Hello, and welcome to another interview at UK Column. And my name is Debbie Evans. Now, today's subject, the mainstream media don't seem to want to talk about, but we do. And it's a subject that I know is close to many of your hearts. So today we're going to talk about fluoride. What is it? Where does it come from? What does it mean to you? And I think after today's talk, you're going to be in for a few surprises. But I mean, my question to all of you is, do you consent to being medicated without your knowledge or any kind of consent? Because that's the question we're going to be asking today. The risks and benefits, and we've been looking at risks and benefits, haven't we, with other pharmaceuticals. So let's look at the risks and the benefits with fluoride. And I'm going to be asking the question, do you trust the government? Because the UK government have got plans for England, for sure, in the fairly near future. But I am delighted to be joined today by an expert in fluoride, someone that's dedicated over 20 years to researching fluoride, standing up against fluoride, and reading pretty much every document there is on fluoride. Joy Warren is an environmental scientist, and she's been campaigning, as I said, for over 20 years, but she's also the national coordinator for the Fluoride Free Alliance UK, which was founded in 2017. Now, all of these details and links are going to be found in the article beneath this interview. So let's ask the expert, shall we? Joy, thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us. This is a subject that is very important, and I know our viewers will be wanting to hear a lot about. Joy, welcome to UK Column.
Thank you, Debbie, for inviting me.
So, Joy, let's start at the very beginning. What is fluoride?
It's a very, very broad question. Fluoride is a derivative of fluorine gas. We don't see fluorine gas in our atmosphere. It's basically created down below the Earth. And as soon as it appears, it combines with another element to make it less gaseous, and it becomes a solid. If in very simplistic terms, it becomes calcium fluoride. That's a natural stuff. It normally stays underground. Obviously, it emerges eventually in groundwater. And in rivers in certain parts of the world. So calcium fluoride is not a very good thing to drink or eat. It does cause problems, especially skeletal fluorosis and dental fluorosis in the indigenous populations who have to drink the water because they have no choice. They have very deep wells. And the wells have got all the heavy metals and the fluoride, calcium fluoride, at the bottom. And it's dredged up and it adjoins the drinking water. So natural fluoride is there. It's not a nice thing to have. It is not a nutrient. It is not essential for anybody's health whatsoever. But it is natural and it occurs naturally in England as well, but at very small levels. And it doesn't cause what you would say is skeletal fluorosis. It's probably always diagnosed as being arthritis. But we certainly do have dental fluorosis in England, which is not very pretty at all. Children get mottled teeth, and sometimes they're really very ugly grown. They are deformed. But that's where they have levels of over 1 milligram per litre in their diet. Right, so what happens now is that a very clever man in America in the 1930s wanted to get rid of some waste, which was being made for the aluminium smelters. He couldn't put it into the rivers, and he wasn't allowed to let it escape into the atmosphere. So he didn't want to pay for it to be disposed of either, to neutralize it. So some very clever scientists got together and said, well, this stuff is okay for children's teeth. Look at the Texan teeth. They're a bit buck teeth, but at least they are not falling out. We're not getting dental decay. So why don't we do something with your waste and say that it's good for teeth, which is what happened. The aluminium smelter guy had lots of influence, political influence, and he managed to get some towns to agree to having it drip fed into the drinking water. Now, the waste is artificial hazardous industrial waste, which comes from the aluminium smelters. But these days, it also comes from phosphate fertilizer manufacturing as well. The artificial waste is not natural. It's a construct of industry and it's called hydrofluorosilicic acid. And the chemical formula is H2SiF6. That's two atoms of hydrogen, one atom of silica, and six atoms of fluoride. Now, that's put into water at the factory, about 78% water, 20% hexafluorosilicic acid, and the rest are heavy metals and contaminants which are in the water, which is added to the industrial waste. That is not pure, not cleansed or anything like that at the manufacturing where they're making phosphate fertilizer. It's put into tankers and shipped across the Mediterranean, up the Bay of Biscay, and it lands in Tilbury Docks in London, where it's distributed around England to the fluoridating water companies. It's used because it's the least expensive thing they can find to add to our drinking water to ostensibly try and reduce dental decay in children.
Do you know what, Joy? I'm listening to this now. Have I got this right? So there's two types of fluoride. So there's the natural, and then there's this waste, which comes from fertilizer. So hang on a minute, waste. Waste. I'm scratching my head because why are we feeding waste, dangerous waste, toxic waste, into the drinking water? Have I got that right, or have I gone slightly off-piste a little bit and got it horribly wrong?
You don't have it wrong. You really don't. It is toxic, hazardous waste. But once it's sold to a company or a country that wants it, it loses its label waste. So it comes across the Mediterranean as hazardous industrial valuable byproduct.
Wow. Wow. So we're actually making money off waste by feeding it to our populations. I mean, I'm just staggered. So, right. Okay. So now we've got that identified. People are going to be saying, okay, so where in the world is doing this? I mean, surely this is ridiculous, but I know that we have got areas in the UK, some water companies in the UK are using fluoride. So how wide is this, Joy? I mean, is the whole of the world fluoridated, or is it just pockets of places? And why us?
It's us because of the special relationship we have with the USA. The USA started this going back in the 1940s, late 40s, with some trials, which they said were successful, but they didn't look at the downsides. Our dentists went across and had a look, and they said, it was wonderful, we should do it for our children. So they brought it back, and the government was persuaded. So part of England, 6% of England, 10% of England, 6 million people are now fluoridated. The Irish got the bug as well. So the whole of Southern Ireland, Republic of Ireland, is fluoridated, unless they have well water, in which case they are safe. And then it's spread across to Australia and New Zealand. All English-speaking developed countries, all with a special relationship with the United States of America, and all influenced by them. There are some other countries throughout the world. I mean, Singapore. Singapore is fluoridated. Some parts of South America are fluoridated. It's difficult to remember who they all are. We know that Spain was fluoridating up until about 2 or 3 years ago. But between, say, 10 and 3 years ago, they all gradually stopped fluoridating their cities. We don't know why they'd started in the first place. That's lost in the mists of time. We think there are a couple of pockets still in Europe, but we haven't got confirmation of that yet. So it's basically England, part of all of Southern Ireland, America, big time, and Australia, big time, and New Zealand, big time.
So, Joy, they're putting fluoride into the water. and I'm trying to envisage a water company with a bucket or a container of fluoride and throwing it into the water. I mean, do we have a dose? Do we have a safe dose? Do we have, I mean, clearly this is not a safe product in any way, shape or form, but do they classify it as having a dosage? Are we all dosed through a drink of water?
We are given a very strict measurement of 1 milligram of fluoride per litre of drinking water or treated water. The dosage is uncontrolled. In other words, a man who has a very heavy manual workload or is a sportsman can possibly drink 4 litres of water a day, whereas a baby, an infant, over 6 months old, for example, would have a third of a litre. Anybody else can have as much or as little as they want. So we have a medicine here where there's no dosage on the tap. You just basically drink as much as you like the rest of your life because somebody down the road has children who've got dental decay. I mean, this is the bad thing about it. It is compulsory medicine, which we all have to have because it all comes out of the same water mains. You can't turn your tap off because you need the water. If you're not drinking it, you need it for other things like doing the washing up or washing machines or even washing the car or watering the garden. You can't turn it off. But you still have to pay for it. But it is a medicine. And I have confirmation that it is a medicine. And that's a whole new can of worms.
It absolutely is. And I mean, presumably, you know, I do have this picture of somebody throwing a bucket of fluoride into water container that's delivering it straight to our taps. But in actual fact, we have to remember, and water is one of my subjects, especially wastewater, that a lot of this wastewater is going through the sewers and out into the sea and isn't going to be drunk. I mean, how much of this water is actually for drinking water? I think it's quite a low percent, isn't it, Joy?
It's a very low percentage. Very low percentage indeed. Of 100% of water which is fluoridated, we reckon about 2% of it is drunk in households. So, yeah, and everything eventually, obviously, it'll be coming out of our bodies in our urine. So 99% possibly goes down into the sewers. And half of what goes into the sewage enters our rivers in the sewage treated effluent. And the rest goes into sewage sludge, some of which is spread on our fields. So it's now in our environment. We don't believe that it's so helpful to the water environment at all. Fish cannot cope with fluoride, but it can in the sea. It's a different environment, and the fish in the sea have adapted to it. But river fish don't like it, and we have to look at salmon going upstream, and they actually do not like going through the water by the outfall of an aluminium smelter. They have to have fish passages to bypass that particular lot of rubbish coming out of the smelters. We are very concerned. We're trying to get the Environment Agency to listen and to do an environment risk assessment, but they don't have the remit to measure it. They can actually monitor it for its presence, but not to actually work out how much there is in the sewage effluent. What we could tell them is 0.5 milligrams per litre. But see, the problem is then nobody is actually doing the research for river fish, river animalcules, anything living on the bottom of the river. It's not being investigated. I think possibly, just to apologise for the EA, they are very strapped for cash. They do not have enough staff to do everything we would like them to do.
Wow. I mean, you know, this is, I can see now why the mainstream media won't take this particular subject up, because clearly it's one that we should all be talking about. But let's look at the UK government legislation that's coming up, because I know that you're very concerned that even though we've still got 6 million people in this country, which I think, what is that, equate to 10% of the population have actually got access to fluoridated water. So now the governments are going to be rolling it out to the rest of England. Is that right? And have we got objections or consultations with regards to this, Joy?
We are waiting for the public consultation to be announced for the northeast of England. It's taking time. And my guess is that I hope the Department of Health is waiting for news of the American court case in San Francisco, where fluoride and the Environmental Protection Agency is being taken to court for allowing fluoride in the environment, especially in babies' bodies and also in the unborn child. We have determined that it is a presumed developmental neurotoxin. And the judge has been in charge of this case since 2016. The last day of the hearing was about a week and a half ago, and we're just hoping now for his verdict soon. We hope he's going to come on our side to say that it should not be allowed in drinking water. Well, we don't know when it's going to happen. So if he finds in our favour, the chances are the Department of Health is going to have to sort of do a double think and start thinking, well, we can't say it's safe and effective anymore. We certainly can't say it's safe if it's causing a reduction in IQ in children. So we're going to have to sort of backpedal. And they'll backpedal as long as they are in government, and then possibly the Labour government will do exactly the same as the Conservative government, start thinking, oh, it's good stuff, it saves children's teeth. Then ignore the fact it's a developmental neurotoxin. We can't say for sure. We know it's just basically hope at the moment that we will not have a public consultation in the northeast. But if we do, we are ready for them. We've got a website set up. We've got all the material at our disposal to give to the residents to help them to take part in the public consultation. It's a long haul at the moment.
So many questions. I mean, I have literally, if our audience could see me now, I'm surrounded by pieces of paper because I've got so many questions. And I know that people watching will be immediately saying, right, is my area fluoridated? How do I get to find out? And also, I know that you're particularly concerned, Joy, about some pilot schemes that are going on. So for people watching, if you might well be in one of those pilot schemes, listen closely now to what Joy has to say about what is going on in areas of England that you may not have already been aware about.
Mm-hmm. All right, so we're looking at natural fluoride and artificial fluoride. Naturally fluoridated areas are mainly on the east coast of England. Coming down from Hartlepool, where it's magnesium fluoride at 1.9 milligrams per litre of fluoride, which is very high. So Hartlepool water dilutes it down to about 1.3 tops. Sometimes it's 1.2, sometimes it's 0.9 milligrams of fluoride per litre. Then as you come down the east coast, the incidence of fluoride reduces. There's quite a lot in the east side of Essex itself. And then as you cross across the country to the Bristol Channel, the levels reduce very much so. So by the time you get to Bristol, it's almost absent indeed. There are two pockets of natural fluoride called Uttoxeter in Staffordshire, I think it's Staffordshire, and also a little bit in the east of Newbury. But everything else is down to about 0.1 milligrams of fluoride, and in many cases, nothing at all. It all depends on the rock strata underlying the cities and villages. When we have a look at the map of fluoridated England, it's completely different. There are dirty, great big blotches of blue all over the place. Parts of the northeast are already fluoridated. That's Newcastle, Gateshead and North Tyneside, a little bit of Northumbrian and a little bit of County Durham. Then we move down the country until we get to Bedfordshire, where there's a small amount. Then you move to the west and you find the whole of the West Midlands is fluoridated. Go up north and Cheshire, Nantwich, Crewe are fluoridated. In between there's pockets of fluoridation in Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire, and a lot in Lincolnshire. Then you come west to West Cumbria, and the whole of West Cumbria, south of Maryport, is fluoridated, down to and including Sellafield. Then there's Southern Ireland, which is thoroughly fluoridated. The pilot scheme in the Isle of Man hasn't taken off yet, and there is a petition being signed only by residents against the proposal to fluoridate the island. The main pilot scheme is northeast, and those counties which are threatened, or areas which are threatened, are South Tyneside, Sunderland, Darlington, Stockton-on-Tees, Middlesbrough, Cleveland, Redcar, all of County Durham, apart from Consett, which is already fluoridated. And I mentioned Northumberland. Well, there's two large pockets already fluoridated, but there's a bit in the middle separating them, which is threatened with fluoridation. Nottinghamshire, that's an interesting case. We have a guy there, chairman of the Health and Wellbeing Board, who is very, very keen on fluoridation. But he's a medical doctor, and he should know better. I mean, he should have actually looked into this and look at the medical ethics, that you cannot give people medicine without their consent. But he's very keen, and he's actually asked the Secretary of State if Nottinghamshire could go out to public consultation soon. But it won't happen before the North East consultation, because it would be a waste of money. Because if the North East residents say, no, we don't want it, then there'd be no justification for going out to Nottinghamshire at all. Any other places which are trying to have it in their water? They appear every now and then, and I just send a letter to the Health and Wellbeing Board and tell them the true facts of the case, and it just all seems to fizzle out. Our problem is that the councillors in the local authorities are listening to their public health consultants in oral health, who have been taught in their colleges of public health that fluoridation is a really good thing to prevent dental decay. Now, if you've got an employee and they're an expert, you listen to them. You're not going to say, get lost, we don't really want to know about that. You're going to say, okay, that's what you recommend, and you're saying it'll be less expensive in the long term. Oh, and by the way, the government's paying for it. You're not paying for it, local authority. The government will do everything for you. Oh, that'd be great, and we don't have to worry anymore. Correct. You don't have to go and send people into schools to teach the children how to clean their teeth, because the fluoridation will be absolutely fantastic. It'll stop dental decay dead in its tracks. Actually, that's not really true. They are actually doing these toothbrushing programs in primary schools at the moment, and we hope they will continue, because that's the only way that you can stop dental decay, is to make toothbrushing, tooth hygiene, a sustainable practice. So the pockets, the pilot schemes, are now moving into schools to teach children how to clean their teeth, which is good. However, they're also doing fluoride varnishes, which is not so good. And it's another can of worms.
I was going to ask you about the fluoride varnish, actually, Joy, because, you know, we're looking, I mean, everybody's going to be saying, oh, my goodness, you know, I could be in a fluoridated area. And I promise you, we're going to come on towards the end of the interview today, we'll come on to measures that you can take, and we'll talk about filters and distillers. But I just want to get back to the dental decay, because there is actually, there's no evidence whatsoever that fluoride prevents dental decay at all. And for those of you that want to have a look, I've been watching a lot of Joy's interviews, and I've been literally hitting the ground running with fluoride. But there are a couple of studies that people might want to look into. One's called the Lotus Study, and one's called the Catfish Study, which shows that there is no benefit to children of fluoride taking fluoride. And the thought that there are going to be dental vans going around to primary schools and painting fluoride onto children's teeth, I have to say to parents, number one, are you aware that this could happen in your school to your child? Number two, do you consent? And number three, are you and your fellow parents in the class, are they aware of the dangers of fluoride? And I think a lot of people aren't, because it's not a subject that people ask about. But I think we must talk a little bit more about the dangers, the risks of fluoride, specifically in children, Joy. Could you just elaborate a little bit for pregnant women and children, particularly at the moment?
Yes, okay. Let's look at the fluoride varnish to begin with. It's really very strange. It's a very concentrated varnish containing a lot of milligrams of fluoride. It's painted on the teeth. It has to dry. Child cannot swallow while it's drying. It cannot rinse its mouth out while it's drying. So it's really very difficult. You have to be very careful the child does not swallow, because otherwise it might erode the stomach lining. Over time, in the 6 months following the painting on the teeth, the fluoride is going to erode. Now, it's not going to be spat out. It's going to be swallowed. I don't know how bioavailable the fluoride is in the flakes of varnish as it erodes and is swallowed and goes into the stomach. But I think here you have to have the precautionary principle. You don't want your little child to have a dicky tummy because the varnish has not adhered to the teeth. And it can't have gone anywhere else. So 6 months' time, they will give you another application of the varnish. And I am not convinced that it's the best thing for a child to have on his teeth. That's my main consideration. They also use Fischer sealants, which I'm trying to get again, Fischer sealants, which do work. As they basically seal the cracks in the teeth and stop decay starting in those cracks. I'm really doubtful about even fluoridated toothpaste, because you see the some adverts, you put a long strip of toothpaste onto a brush. For a child, it should only be a tiny dot, a small pea-sized amount. Well, the chances are the child's going to swallow some of that, and the concentration of fluoride in the toothpaste is quite high. I mean, see, 1,000 ppm, 1,460 ppm fluoride in the tube. A small amount is going to be equivalent to the fluoride in a glass of water. But if they do swallow their toothpaste, they might cause problems in their stomach. And what they're using is sodium monofluorophosphate, which is a derivative of the hexafluorosilicic acid, which comes out of the phosphate fertilizer manufactories. Obviously, it's been refined, it's been purified. But it's still fluoride, and fluoride is a general protoplasmic poison. Let's go to children. We have got, at the moment, a lot of research studies which show that swallowed fluoride or absorbed fluoride does damage the IQ of the unborn child and the infant. This is what the court case is about in America. The National Toxicology Program, which is a government-sponsored agency, has examined 55 studies looking at fluoride and reduced intelligence, and found that 52 of them conclusively showed a really strong connection between fluoride in the fetal body and in the infant body and a reduction in intelligence. And most of the intelligence reduces in the fetus, because the fetus gets most of the fluoride that's in the mother's bloodstream. Now, mother doesn't know about this. There's a little bit of a hint in the American Dental Association website some time ago, which said, be careful about giving your infant fluoridated water in their formula make, in their formula feed. Let me just find my bit of paper here on what we should say. The expectant mother is exposed to fluoride in fluoridated water. And in parts of the Americas, there's more than 1 milligram of fluoride in each liter of water. Natural fluoride in America can be up to 4-5 milligrams. And mother perhaps isn't rich enough to buy a filter to take it out. If you have food made with fluoride, if fluoridated water is added to food in a factory and you eat that food, then you're going to be absorbing the fluoride in the water. There's fluoride in dental gel treatments, which the mother might be exposed to when she has to go to the dentist, because, as you know, When you're pregnant, the baby demands all the minerals you have in your body, so the teeth become a little bit weaker. So you have to have treatments, and you have to go and see the dentist quite regularly. The one thing that shocks people more than anything else is the fact that tea leaves, that's the Indian tea, black tea, the cuppa that shears, has got fluoride in it. And the one with the highest amount is the brown labels, or the actual cheaper ones with the old, made of older tea leaves, about 3 to 4 milligrams of fluoride per litre of tea. So 4 mugs of tea, you're drinking 4 milligrams of fluoride. And if you're making it with fluoridated tap water, you're getting 5 milligrams per litre. And that's very, very high. And of course, all that goes into your bloodstream and into the fetal body. There's certain things like if you're not drinking alcohol, and you shouldn't, you might be drinking canned drinks. Well, I've done an analysis of Pepsi Max, which is by PepsiCo, but it's sent to Britvic in rugby. It's made with, the concentrate is made with fluoridated rugby tap water. So you've got about a milligram per litre of Pepsi Max, as well as having aspartame in it as well, which is basically, as far as I'm concerned, the devil's own brew. And then the fluoride in pharmaceutical drugs. Well, I imagine some pregnant ladies do take pharmaceutical drugs, and some of them do have fluoride in, which is known as a potentiator, which helps the active substance get into the cells. All in all, a fluoridated pregnant mum is being overdosed, and that means the fetal body is being overdosed. Right. There is no blood-brain barrier in the fetus, and any fluoride will get into the developing brain and start to damage the IQ, if you like. There are several mechanisms, and they are quite complicated, but just assume that fluoride is a general protoplasmic destroyer or disruptor. It'll start by stopping the impulses going across the synapses in the neurons. And if you do that, then that causes permanent brain damage, and that reduces the IQ of the fetus. If that child, when born, gets a formula made up with fluoridated tap water, the reduction in intelligence increases. And we find that perhaps Charles' intelligence will be reduced by about 4 to 5 IQ points in this country, because our level of fluoride is higher than it is in America. So we have to add a little bit more on as far as the reduction is concerned. I mean, this is going to cause a real problem for the child in its later life.
I'm sitting here, you know, with my mouth wide open because, Joy, you are such a mine of information. I'm sure a lot of people are going to be going, oh my goodness, fluoride in food. So what are you checking? We all go into the supermarkets, and I think more of us than ever are trying to use fresh farm produce and local shops as much as possible. But for those that are still going into supermarkets and having to look on the back of packets, et cetera, what should they be looking for and avoiding when it comes to fluoride? I mean, what is it named as on the back of a packet?
It isn't. It isn't there at all. You've got the first ingredient in some foods is aqua or water. Well, it's not water. It's medicinal water, and it's not declared as such. The only time you will find fluoride on the back of a packet is if you look at natural mineral water and spring water, where it has to be declared along with all the other minerals in that water. There's no way you can find out unless you come onto websites like mine. So the tea, there's no fluoride on the back of the packet because it's naturally in the leaves. It's there because tea draws up fluoride water from the bedrock. They might possibly use fluoride water to irrigate the tea bushes. I don't know that for sure, but definitely is in the soil, especially at the foothills of the Himalayas, where the bedrock is fluoride rock, right? So the only way you know is for somebody like me or a guy called Casey Kroll in America or Declan Moore in Ireland to do the analyses of what there is in these tea leaves. And it's not a difficult thing to do. You just need a bit of money to buy the fluoride gauge and the know-how. It's not a case of just sticking a piece of litmus paper in the liquid and finding out what it is, because that is not exact enough. We measure fluoride to 2 decimal points. But the water companies can do it to 4 decimal points. So they've got even more sophisticated apparatus. Now, the only way you'll find out about fluoride in a supermarket is if you go along and look at the labels on the back of the mineral waters. They don't even say anything about table water, which is tap water in the main. They don't say that either.
It's just wow, because you think, well, gosh, you've got to look on the back of packets. But if it's not there, then you don't know what you're looking for. Then you have to presume it is. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of teapots watching this going, oh my goodness, what am I going to drink now? I can't drink, did you say Indian tea or specific tea? What tea do you drink, Joy, dare I ask?
If I wanted to, I would go for Red Bush, which is a South African tea. It doesn't taste anything like the cup of cheers, but it definitely does not have more than 0.05 fluoride in it, if I remember rightly. And obviously, yeah, coffee, organic coffee, because I don't even trust ordinary coffee grounds because they may be irrigated with fluoridated irrigation water. It's really difficult. You think I was paranoid. No, I'm not paranoid. I'm just careful. I make sure I do not drink or eat anything that I suspect. Sometimes I get caught unawares. In the same way, I do not drink or eat out of aluminium, because I don't like the idea of having the fluoride possible in my body and the aluminium in my body combining and affecting my brain. So you have to be careful. And that after a while, it becomes a way of life. In the same way, we know we would never knowingly pick up something and eat it if it got arsenic in it. That would be stupid to do so. It's just any food manufactured in a fluoridated area or manufactured in Hartlepool, for example, you don't want to eat or drink because it will have fluoridated water to make up the recipe. Like bread made in the West Midlands. No, it's got fluoride in it. It's bound to have. Actually, anything, you know, anything that's manufactured in West Midlands, I would not touch.
It's medicines as well, though, that shocked me. And I mean, I'm just going to go through a list of them that I've found out that, you know, any one of these medicines could have, is it fluoxetine, HCl? Am I right in saying that? That's the active ingredient that you should look for? Because we always say to our audience that for pharmaceuticals, for example, there's always two names. There's a brand name and a trade name. But actually, if you want to know what the active ingredient is, you have to look at the patient information leaflet. And of course, with the vaccines, we didn't have that. Nobody was given a patient information leaflet prior to having a vaccine. But when you get tablets and your prescription, you should have a patient information leaflet. So am I right in saying that, Joy? Is it fluoxetine HCl? Is that right?
Any prescription drug which has in its scientific name the letters FLU is going to contain fluoride. Full stop. Everyone. Right. And there's so many of them.
I was going to come on actually and say that I've got a little list. So any of these drugs in any of these generic variations could have fluoride. So you need to check anesthetics, antacids, antidepressants, chemotherapy, cholesterol-lowering drugs, anti-inflammatory, anti-malarial, anti-anxiety, antibiotics, arthritis. All of these drugs that somebody may be receiving for a medical condition, what I would say first is please check the patient information leaflet and see what the active ingredients are, because the side effects can be headaches, teeth staining, which is, I think, the dental fluorosis that you were talking about, Joy, where you get mottling of the teeth and the teeth stain. Is that right?
No, it's a different type of staining. You can only get dental fluorosis if you're a child or in the womb, when the fluoride affects the tooth buds before they erupt. And the staining caused by the medicines does not actually get through the dentine into the enamel, so it doesn't cause dental fluorosis. It'll just be some sort of other staining from other bodily processes in the mouth.
The side effects go on, you know, nausea, vomiting, swelling of the lips or tongues or throat, difficulty breathing, hives. I mean, let's just get on to a few of the serious adverse reactions and the medical conditions that you're concerned about. And I think you've already mentioned skeletal fluorosis, so perhaps we can talk about that a little bit. And also, I know that you have concerns with hypothyroidism, which is an underactive thyroid gland, and the fluoride links with that. Could you explain a little bit more on that, Joy, please?
Right. So when you get skeletal fluorosis, and it's very obvious in places like India, where the children are born deformed, and as their bones grow, the fluoride causes the bones to grow even more in the wrong places. And in some cases, it's horrendous to see. You see the calf bones growing over the foot because it can't stop, because they've got high levels of fluoride. It's recognized by the Indian government, and the Indian government is trying to reduce the amount of fluoride in Indian tap water. We are stupid in this country, and our government's trying to increase it. So it doesn't make too much sense there, does it? It's obviously like having alternative universes. The children who are deformed can't walk properly. Some of them only move around on their knees, which are also deformed. Their arms and elbows and hands are deformed, and their backs are deformed. Gradually over time, they just basically die a young death because they just can't function properly. And of course, they have to be looked at. They can't run around and play or anything like that. They use crutches. And it's horrendous to see. If you just look it up, skeletal fluorosis, India photos, put those keywords into your search engine and you'll see what I mean. Yeah, people die young. Some actually do survive until old age, but their lives are miserable, absolutely miserable. Now, that's an extreme form of arthritis. But we don't get that in this country. We get arthritis stage one, stage two, stage three, but it's never known as skeletal fluorosis. But my bet is that stage one arthritis is early stages of skeletal fluorosis in some cases, not in every case. It is debilitating, of course it is, and there's nothing you can do much about it because it takes time to get that fluoride removed from the bones, and that's a whole art form, scientific art form of its own, because you have to then start to put in minerals which will find the fluoride and escort it out of the body. Right, should we talk about hypothyroidism now, because it's a really very damaging illness. Contracted by, in the main, ladies who've just gone through their menopause. We had a really interesting piece of research done by the University of Kent in 2014, where the researchers counted all the diagnoses of hypothyroidism through every surgery in England and mapped it against the map of fluoridated, non-fluoridated England, and came to the conclusion that in West Midlands, there was almost double the amount of diagnoses of hypothyroidism compared to non-fluoridated Greater Manchester. And throughout England, 30% more hypothyroidism in fluoridated areas of England compared to non-fluoridated England. Now, this is a correlation, it's not causation, and we really would have hoped that the government would have picked up this research and run with it, but they have not done so. They kicked back and have not done the research. And to this day, in their four-yearly monitoring reports on fluoride and health, they have dodged the issue of looking at hypothyroidism. That just goes to show they do not really want to know the truth. So we're stuck with this correlation study, which is so convincing, but only as far as correlation's concerned. But all I can say to you is this. I've been to many fairs in the past where I've talked to people in the West Midlands about hypothyroidism, and so many of them have either got hypothyroidism or know people or are relatives of people who have hypothyroidism. And my clinching question of some of these people is, do they have showers or do they have baths? And sometimes they say showers, but most of the time they said, oh, my relative loves her bath, really loves a hot bath. And I think, well, surely, is it not common sense to realize that our skin is leaky, absorbent? Are we not taking in all the fluoride that's in the bathwater when it contacts the skin? Again, another study that's not being done, and it should be. So, yeah, hypothyroidism is on the increase in fluoridated areas.
Gosh, there's another gosh. I think there's a lot of wows and gosh in this interview, to be honest, Joy. And for those people that are watching, you know, we must say that an underactive thyroid can be, it can be a many reasons that you have an underactive thyroid. But some of the symptoms of an underactive thyroid are tiredness and weight gain, depression, dry skin, dry hair, muscle aches, more common in women, actually. And for new mums, your baby, when your baby is about 5 days old, normally gets a heel prick test, or sometimes in hospital when you've had your baby, gets a heel prick test to test for a variety of disorders, but one in particular, and that is underactive thyroid. So just to connect that up. So hypothyroidism, do you live in a fluoridated area? I think would be my question to everybody. Everybody that's living in a fluoridated area. I mean, the crazy thing is, I know that our producer Stephanie wants me to ask you this question, Joy, and it's such a relevant question, because why on earth do the dental industry think that fluoride is good in the first place, considering we've got this absolute mountain of evidence with no benefits for children? In fact, children swallowing fluoride varnish doesn't seem like a great alternative to dental decay to me. So what on earth were the dental industry thinking of?
It was a really good way of getting rid of the industrial waste. They thought there was a correlation between fluoride swallowed and a reduction in dental decay. Back in the 1950s, it was easier to prove that because there was no fluoride anywhere else in a child's environment. And they thought it was working, but what they didn't tell people was that the control group, which was not fluoridated, had an equal reduction in dental decay. So it was all an artificial construct to try and get rid of the fluoride in the waste. And also there's a huge amount of involvement with the Manhattan Project, because they use lots of fluoride for making the bomb. Then we have the phosphate fertilizer manufacturing, which produces the same sort of waste, including the fluoride. So they had to all get rid of it. It was all highly industrial, economic, political, wheels within wheels, and money talked. These days, it's not possible to really prove that fluoride, when it's swallowed, protects the teeth. And in fact, we've got the catfish study from West Cumbria, where they found that babies who have been fluoridated since conception had about 4% less dental decay in the fluoridated area. But when the children were fluoridated from the age of 5, when they looked at them at the age of 10, they had a reduction of 2%. When they looked at adults throughout England, they found that the reduction was about 3% in fluoridated areas compared to non-fluoridated areas. And there's absolutely no proof whatsoever that swallowed fluoride reduces oral health inequalities across social groups. None. They're scanty studies which have no validity in science at all. So we have to discount those. No proof at all. And Alan Johnson, the ex-Secretary of State for Health about 10 years ago, used to like to say that fluoride gives poor kids rich kids' teeth. Well, I'm sorry, Alan Johnson, it doesn't work like that. And you're completely wrong. And this is my message to you if you're listening. And by the way, Alan Johnson is a vice president of the British Fluoridation Society these days. So we know which side of the butter his bread is buttered on.
Well, we always like to tell our audience to do things. So Alan Johnson, maybe somebody would like to share this interview with Alan Johnson. Maybe somebody would like to email, or maybe quite a few of you would like to. I mean, Joy, we've covered a huge amount today, and I know that as our fluoride expert now, there's going to be loads of questions coming in from our audience, and I'm sure if you're agreeable, we would love to talk again, because we've just literally scraped the top of the iceberg. But to before I throw to you for your last word, people are going to be saying, well, what can we do? What can we do? Do we write to our MPs? Do we get water distillers? Do we check our medication, all of our medication? Do we change our medication? Where do we go to find you? Do you want to just finish up on that before I throw to the last word for you? So a positive of what people can do so that they're not drinking fluoridated water, or their area is, maybe they can stop their area from being fluoridated in the future?
That's highly possible. That's the whole raison d'etre of my existence, is to stop it being rolled out throughout England. First of all, people have to find out if they're definitely fluoridated or not. If they've got natural fluoride, there's not much they can do about it unless they talk to the water company and ask the water company to bring in supplies from outside the fluoride area to dilute the fluoride down to a safe level of, say, 0.1, 0.2 is probably safe. But anything more than that, they have to be careful. Next, if they are getting fluoride, either artificially or naturally, they need to consider, do they try and stop it happening by talking to their MP? Yes. Do they start being active? Yes. Do they try and get a group? Yes. Do they talk to everybody they can to get support, who have people who have influence, in other words? Then after that, they can start to try and avoid it, because I think it's really bad news to avoid without doing anything about getting it out of the water in the first place. That's my opinion. Yes, by all means, you can use filters. You have to be careful. Some of the filters don't remove fluoride. Some of them reduce it, but don't remove it. And some of them are downright fraudulent. But the three methods I would recommend are reverse osmosis, distillation, and one only water filter jug in England. And I'm not allowed to advertise, I guess, but it takes all the fluoride out. And obviously, as the filter gets old, then obviously it starts letting it in. But it's not a hugely expensive. But people on a restricted income can't do any of that. They are stuck with either buying bottled water or drinking the tap water. And that is where we are not increasing equality. We're not levelling up. We're making sure that disadvantaged people on low incomes are still going to suffer from having fluoride in their environment, because they can't stop it. They can't afford the filters. So this is my main aim here. We've got to be able to get it out of the drinking water, and there's no reason for it to be in there apart from political and commercial and industrial pressures. And we know that the MPs in Parliament are lobbied in the Houses of Parliament. We know it happens, but we don't do that sort of thing. We just write to everybody we can without actually going down to London.
Joy, I have to say, your work is phenomenal. I mean, you know pretty much everything on fluoride, and the consultation work that you've done, the templates that you've done, is just absolutely extraordinary. And I think for everybody watching, are you happy with the fact that you're going to be medicated without your consent? Because that's what we're looking at for people that are living in fluoridated areas. You are receiving a medication without your consent, without being told the side effects, the long-term effects. It has to be stopped. It really has to be stopped. And I really, again, can't thank you enough, Joy. And I know that you've got a very active Telegram channel. You've got your website, and all of those details will be in the article beneath this. But for now, until the next time, I just want to thank you again and throw to you for your last words, Joy Warren, on fluoride. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Debbie. I've got three asks here, or three points to make, We know that fluoridated water is a compulsory medicine. It's been shown in the British Standard, which controls the, the ingredients in the fluoridating acid. As it's a medicine, it turns drinking water into medicinal water. And medicinal water is not covered by the provisions and the protections of the Drinking Water Directive, which has been retained in the UK post-Brexit. Since it's medicinal water, we don't get drinking water anymore in the West Midlands where I live. We get medicinal water. And I've been paying innocently since I first became a householder, since it became added to the drinking water, 1979, I think. I was paying for it innocently, thinking it was drinking water. And when I decided or discovered that it wasn't drinking water, but it was medicinal water, I felt I could stop paying for it, because you can't make somebody pay for something they don't really want to buy. Trouble is, of course, it comes through the tap. You've got to open the tap. However, for 3 years, I've managed to not pay for my medicinal water. I pay for sewerage because I think I have to get the sewerage removed from the house. And obviously, that's all the drinking water, fit for, is flushing down the toilet. So we know that we can say it's definitely not drinking water. The other thing is that the dose is uncontrolled. Everybody gets as much as they want to drink. And some children who are tiny, of course, get more than they should. And grown-ups who have a heavy manual job get more than they should as well. So it's really stupid not to have a controlled dose for something which is a medicine, which you would not have at normally in pharmaceutical practice. And finally, the other thing I needed to discuss really is the fact that we have been told that fluoride reduces extractions of teeth in hospital under general anaesthetic, which is for children, because dentists don't do it in the chair anymore. And we've now crunched the numbers, and we've used official data, and we've found that the areas which have more extractions or a higher rate of extractions are the fluoridated areas, not the non-fluoridated areas, which we're working up now, because we're going to try and cover the country and do a comparison with all other areas, just to show the government that they've been told porkies by their consultants and their advisors. And the NHS is just basically out on a limb, because they can't prove that fluoridation reduces extractions in hospital.